Sandman is a renowned risk communications expert and the creator of the risk equals hazard plus outrage formula. He is one of the preeminent risk communications consultants in the United States, and as a full-time consultant with a PhD in communications from Stanford University, he provides counsel to his clients to help them manage their reputations in the face of public controversies. He sat down with us to give an overview of risk communications.
Dr. Peter Sandman, you're known worldwide as an expert in the field of risk communications. In a nutshell, what is risk communications?
Well, the core of risk communication is the understanding that the risks that upset people or scare people or anger people on the one hand tend to be fairly different from the risks that endanger people. So whenever you need to talk to people about a risk, the first thing you want to know is where does it stand on those two dimensions, how upsetting it is and how dangerous it is. So if you picture a 2x2 table, upsetting or not upsetting, dangerous or not dangerous, then you get four boxes. If it's dangerous but not upsetting, that is, you might kill people but you're not going to worry them, then the problem is precaution advocacy. The core of risk communication is trying to shake people by their collective lapels, warn them that this is dangerous, and get them to take precautions. In the opposite box, if it's upsetting but not dangerous, then your problem is something I call outrage management. Your goal is to try to get the outrage under control, to persuade people that even though they may have good reasons to be concerned, those reasons aren't technically sound. That is, you know, they may be right that they've been mistreated, they may be right that they've been misinformed, they may have valid reasons for being upset, but they're not in fact endangered. And that, you know, so that's the second paradigm. The third paradigm is when people are both endangered and upset, and that's crisis communication, when people are rightly upset because something is genuinely dangerous. In precaution advocacy, you're trying to get them more upset. In outrage management, you're trying to get them less upset. In crisis communication, you're not trying to do either one. You're trying to help them bear how upset they rightly are by a situation that genuinely endangers them. The fourth corner in that 2x2 matrix, when people are neither endangered nor upset, isn't very interesting. In that quadrant, you shouldn't be doing communication at all.
So with that said, why is a risk communications approach important, and who do you think should be following it?
Well, the problem is that most professional communicators, and for that matter, most non-professional communicators, most amateurs, automatically act as if they were in what I call the precaution advocacy box. That is, they routinely talk to people as if the problem were that those people aren't paying attention and they're apathetic and they need to be aroused. They need to be shaken by their collective lapels and persuaded to do something. That's the usual situation in PR. Nearly all of PR is talking to people who are much less interested in what you have to say than you are. That's the usual situation in politics. Politicians spend most of their time talking in sound bites to apathetic audiences. So getting people interested is what's usual in those two fields, but it's only one of the corners in risk communication. So risk communication as an intellectual understanding is very important so that when you are in one of the other two corners, you know it and you know the difference and you know that you need to behave differently than your political background or your public relations background tells you is the normal way to behave.
So you mentioned outrage. Tell us about the importance of outrage specifically.
Well, I use the term outrage to refer to, you know, what I meant earlier when I talked about people being upset. And it's because I developed this work largely in the context of environmental controversies. And in environmental controversies, if pollution is coming out of a factory or if people are worried about a waste disposal site, the word outrage captures, I think, pretty well the mix of fear and anger and righteous indignation that people feel when they are the involuntary victims of some environmental problem. So I developed a lot of this work in the context of environmental problems that are genuinely offensive. They're involuntary. They're unfamiliar. They're unfair. They're normally imposed on you by institutions you can't trust and institutions that aren't responsive to your concern. So your outrage is entirely justified, even if in fact the environmental risk is quite low. So a lot of this work came in the context of what do you do when people are right to be outraged, but they're not in fact endangered. And I spent a lot of time in the 1980s and 1990s, and I still spend a lot of time trying to help clients understand what they're doing that arouses excessive outrage and what they can change so that they won't outrage people excessively. Now, in the other corners, it's a very different story. In precaution advocacy, the word outrage, which I use because I invented it and I'm famous for it and I'm stuck with it now, but it doesn't apply nearly as well. I mean, if you're trying to get people to get their flu shot, or you're trying to get people to wear a seatbelt, what you're trying to arouse usually isn't outrage. It's much more like concern. So the problem when outrage is low, of getting people more concerned, more upset, more willing to take precautions, or if your government more willing to let you take precautions, the word outrage is not really a good fit for that set of feelings. It's just, that's the jargon and I'm stuck with it.
Peter, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.
That was Dr. Peter Sandman sharing his thoughts about risk communication strategies. Thanks for listening.